Welcome back to Middle Age Gaming. We are not the only live podcast with a like button, but ours is the best. So make sure you click it because, trust me, it'll make you a better person. And once you're done with that, please turn your attention to my co-host, Phil, who is about to fill you in on what you can expect over the next hour or so. Phil, would you like to fill us in on today's theme?
We have, at the beginning of summer, we discussed and looked at upcoming releases that have excited us, ready to get us through the summer. And we also even looked at the trailer videos of things from which festival? From festivals with the
E3?
E3, yes. That's,
just the biggest
I'm just
one.
Tired. My brain has not started functioning yet. And we decided at the end of this, now it's getting towards the end of summer, and we're going to start going into the kids back at school and middle-aged gamers, well, not like me, but maybe like you, have their children going and have more free time. So what games are we excited about, and do you guys agree with us? Are they releases that you guys are looking for as the things that we missed out? Be sure to let us know as well, because maybe we'll be able to cover those in future episodes. Who's going first, Adam?
I believe it is Antoine this week, correct?
Oh, is it? Well, fair enough. I'll start then.
All right. So we're going to start with Antoine then.
All right. Okay, so on the topic of kids, mine actually restarted the end of August here in Canada, so that will leave me more time to play, maybe, hopefully, I don't know. The game I picked, it's not really a surprise, but it's Tales of Arise, another Tales of franchise, which I really, really like, and published and edited, as usual, by Bandai Namco. This one is set to be released on September 9, and if we are lucky, apparently a couple of weeks before the release, we should have a playable demo. So I don't know if it's the kind of demo that you can play and save your data and use it for the game, or if it's just the basic demo, like Bravely Default 2, where you can just have a taste of the game, but you have to restart everything once you play the game. So another Tales of, which they said, so we saw it for the first time, I think, at the E3 of 2019. Since then, not much has filtered. But from what I saw, it's pretty much in line with what we're used to. They are tinkering, as usual, on the combat mode, because combat is the main aspect, with story, of course, but it's one of the main aspects and the main things they change for each titles. In this one, what I saw compared to Berseria that I played just before, it I believe was a previous release, this one does not have grade, you know, by letter like A, S, etc. But they grade by points, which in the end I think will be kind of the same system. Just to remind you, in Tales of, the better you fight, the better your grade in a fight, and the better your loot, your experience, everything. So they always try to make you master the combat system, which I always find interesting, because in other games you can just, you know, play crap in easy and just follow the story. That's nice, but you are losing, you know, the gameplay aspect of the game. In here they are really trying to get you involved in it, in this fight, by making this point system or grade system, which is, you know, like classic, but always nice. And again, they're going to tweak it. I'm going to check exactly what kind of tweak they made, apart from the fact that it's point this time. The skits, which is a big element of Tales of, apparently will be better, like better animated, better drawn. Apparently, it's what they promised. So we'll see. Skits is this little kind of cartoon, say, in-game, which makes the immersion in the game always deeper. And sits here since Tales of Symphonia 20 years ago and more. So again, a classic for the series, but a classic that you need to see. So they are trying to improve on it. What else did I see? It still remains a very classic Tales of, but it seems very nice. Previous Tales of on Berseria was a bit special, I would say, because we were following the main character, and the main character was the evil lord fighting for a revenge, and you don't really care about the ecosystem of countries and all. There's just one, I say country, but it's just the church, and you're the evil guy destroying the church, and the man at the end of the church. Here, it's way more a classic scenario when you have two countries or two worlds, as I understand, where they were in balance, and one eats up the others, and put his inhabitants into slavery, eat up their resources. And so your main characters, you will have one from each world. And from what I understand, one of them, both of them are cursed, actually. One, if you are next to her, I believe the girl, she gives pain to others around her. And the guy, on the contrary, cannot feel pain. So that's why they're a good match. That's the base story that I saw. So you will have some rebellions against the invaders and this kind of trope. So sounds all very classic, but I'm okay with classic, you know, as long as they, you know, tinker and make it a little bit, as long as it's exciting, the story is good, I'm sure that the combat will be fantastic. So yeah, that's my take on this one.
All right.
Oh, and I forgot to add, they went back to something they did in Grace's F, I believe. You can farm. Cooking is always important. In here, you can fish, you can farm. They did it in Grace's F. So I think they skip it in the next one, which was Xillia and Berseria. You couldn't do that. Here, they go back to it. So a little farming and fishing management for food. Always nice. And very, very useful in combat. So.
All right.
Did you guys play any Tales of?
I have not played Tales of. I've always wanted to.
You should.
But yeah, but the backlog is always growing, not shrinking.
And so, I will be streaming it, by the way.
Oh, fantastic. So make sure you check it out, guys. Unless, exactly, of course, you don't want spoilers, at which point still watch it, but just look away and turn off the volume. But make sure that we get those views. So yeah, have so it playing in the background.
The pressure is on me to time exactly to finish Spellcaster University just before the release. It is already pre-ordered, and coming from me, who never buy a game on day one, so you can see how hyped I am for this game. I pre-ordered a game.
All right. Well, Phil, you got any feedback or questions? Or
I was more interested with this, so let me get this right. She causes pain to everyone around her, so dominatrix-style S&M features going on with this game is what you're telling me.
Yes, don't say
and you pre-ordered
that,
it very quickly.
Yeah, wishful
of
thinking.
Of course, yes. Are you trying to find out my kids?
Yeah, there's some projection going on here.
just okay. You know, they might be curious. Yeah,
don't forget to put the little 18 plus, you know, so before the show.
So if you were to compare this game, as somebody who's never played it before, what would you compare this game to? I never even really heard much about it.
It's very hard to compare because it's really in a world of its own. It's a classic JRPG. Take a Final Fantasy, see, you have your cities, you have an open world, you have your stories. It's just that the fight is a very live action. I think you could compare it in a way, FF15 try to make it. It's very hard to compare to that. FF15 would be very badly designed compared to it. You have to watch a video. I think that's the best way for me to tell you. Because you have a random arena. You have three modes. You have the manual mode where you can move your character by yourself around the arena. So if you want to flank the enemy, if you want to go from behind it. You have the semi-auto mode where when you move, your character is going to move in a straight line to your focused enemy. You know, there's lots of enemies. You can switch focus to any. And when you're in semi-auto mode, you don't move freely. You move back and forth, but in the direction of the enemy you focus. And the full auto, I never understood, because basically you don't play. You know, the character plays for you. So no, semi-auto and auto. That's how it works. So of course you play semi-auto and manual. I mean, so of course you play manual because you want to be free to move when something. There's very big magic, you know, like this very impressive magic. So when you see something coming, move out of the way. You can dash off. And for the systems, you have they have a systems of, that's not gonna tell you much, but they call it arts. Basically, magic and physical. So you will have some monk type character which only deal physical damage. You will have purely magical users, and don't put them in front because it's useless. And the flavor of the game is it takes time to release a magic, and the stronger the magic, the longest time it takes to cast. So when your caster is at the other side of the field, make sure you use your close combat quarter guys to protect them. Because if you touch the guy casting, the cast is over, you have to restart.
Interrupts.
So you have usually your healing mage, you have your DPS mage, and the DPS mage is always a big step in the Tales of, because when they cast some bigger tornadoes or maelstrom or like meteorites on the field, it's very impressive and very fun, and it can be very challenging.
Ah, interesting.
Depending on difficulties.
Arena combat.
Then. There is, and exactly. And as usual, in Tales of, they like to make little cameos and Easter eggs. So you always have a Colosseum where you register as a solo or team fight. And the last boss of this Colosseum are usually characters from previous games. What else? Usually, that depends on the Tales of. And I was very disappointed with Berseria with that. They usually have a great replay value because when you finish the game allows you points. And these points, you can spend them into, I want to restart the game with all the objects I have, with all the money I had, with all the, XXX. Usually the most expensive is, I want to restart the game, but with times three experience. So each time I kill one enemy, in fact, I kill three. But the problem in the previous Berseria, you restart at level one, and I just don't want to redo the same story. Once I beat up the game sorrowfully, I want to have unlock an even harder dungeon and have my previous experience still with me, so I can just restart at level 80, roll over 3/4 of the game, literally roll over the enemies, and so have a harder challenge in a new unlocked dungeon. I missed that in Berseria, and that's why I was like, So it was a great game, fantastic game, but I'm not going to give it 20 out of 20 because very little replay value. And replay value in a Tales of is important. In my view, it's very important.
So it's not like a one-and-done JRPG.
But that depends. Symphonia, I did it several times because it has been such a long time. But if I recall, there was some kind of summons, and some summons you could only unlock after you beat the game once. So you have to restart everything, and so usually they give the little, strawberry or the little cake, to make you go the extra mile and redo everything. Usually the story is great, but you really have to have a fantastic story to redo it twice in a row. Okay. I love the story of Horizon Zero Dawn, but when I redid it, I was like, I know the story already. There's nothing more for me to think, it would be really great to do it again. Now that was a great game, fantastic, but that's it. It's done, next.
Okay, is this combat more like a Devil May Cry, or more like a Musou type game, or more like a Kingdom Hearts kind of thing?
I never played Kingdom Hearts, but everything you mentioned is more like in an open field. Here is more like you have the enemies visible on the field, you touch them, and you switch to a combat screen, which is a closed-off arena. So you don't fight on an open map.
But is it like is it more combo-based, like what you would have in, say, Devil May Cry?
Absolutely. Or? Oh, absolutely combo-based. And combo-based with between characters. Like if you have two mage casting the same magic, combo. Two firestorm, and you have a giant storm or something like this.
All right. We got a comment here from Weiwei. It says he's asking us, how does he send stars? And I'll be entirely honest with you, Weiwei, I'm not entirely sure. That is Korean specialty, so you're going to have to ask him. Sorry.
If on Facebook, I think there must be a send star button just under the video feed.
Yeah, I would have thought there'd be like a button or something like that. But to be honest, I'm not entirely sure. So that's definitely a Korean question. All right. Do you know how many playable characters there are? I mean, is it the same number that we're seeing here in the video, or do you know if there's going to be more?
Usually six. Okay. And that's more than enough because you have four players in the fight, with two that you can switch depending on your gameplay and stuff. So, and usually they try to develop each character, so six is more than enough.
Okay, so like two tanks, two DPS, two mages, that sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Okay, and this is Tales of, is the series that you reviewed in your first video with Korean, right?
Exactly.
So this is the game where you can do multiplayer. right? And people can kind of like, you can have your friend take over as some of the other characters. Ooh,
absolutely, yes. But when you say multiplayer, be careful. It's very specific to this game, all right? Because when you play the adventure, it's only you. And when you switch to the comeback screen, then your friend can take a pad and play the mage while you play the close combat or something. This, okay. Yes, absolutely. And that's why I did Symphonia several times, because my friend was playing the DPS, you know, the mage, and I was playing the swordman in front, and we had lots of fun with it.
All right.
Yes, there's lots of little stuff on these games. That's why I really love the series, way more than I appreciated the Atelier series, which I'm sure is nice as well, but I couldn't find the... I just couldn't find magic. The interest or the extra... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The little je ne sais quoi.
Did you just trigger Siri on your phone then by mistake?
Absolutely,
yeah. There's someone's Siri going, bidip, bidip, Siri, in the background.
Siri, just shut it, please. Would you be so kind to just shut it? Really?
All right, well, I'm out of my questions. What about you, Phil?
Yeah, it's something completely in the dark for me. I don't really know this game. It's not my type of genre.
Perfect.
Surprise, surprise.
Watch my stream. That's all I can say.
Check it out. Yeah, maybe
because
you'll like it.
I'm going to do it from start to finish. I'm going to try to do 100%. I'm usually not a completionist, but on Tales of, yes, I love
will it be, will you be streaming it in a real language or in French?
Oh, brutal.
You know what? Usually what I do on this one, maybe I'll do it just for you. I always leave you can choose the voice of your characters, and putting a Japanese game in English, I find it like, very creepy. So I put it in Japanese and put the subtitles for you, especially so you get to watch in English, and I'll translate for the French viewers if there is any.
Sounds good.
All right, and on that note, it's going to be Antoine's turn to rip into Phil's game. So, Phil, are you ready? All right. So, yeah, tell us about your game, Phil.
Yeah, I went with classics. You can't go wrong with classics. Well, they did with Warcraft 3. But I wanted to highlight Diablo 2 Resurrected, which I keep talking about, and it's escaped every other edition that's been similar, and I've picked other games instead of Diablo 2. But now we're getting pretty close to the release, supposed to be next month. Pre-orders are up and available, and Diablo 2 is a game that, I mean, there were many games that defined my teenage years that have like a special place. We looked at StarCraft last week, was another one, Red Alert we've looked at before. And this time it came round to Diablo 2. And I am super excited about Diablo 2 Resurrected, simply because I was following feeds around about 2019, Vicarious Visions, the development company, and they were a subsidiary under Activision. And they came out and said, 2019, it was questionable they would be able to ever remaster Diablo 2 because they lost original code in a server corruption issue. And they actually went to game developers, the support staff, the designers. They queried with gamers out in the entire world to try and collect as much of the data they could to offer a remastered version. And luckily they gathered so much, and then they got the original artist, because the idea of this is it is the original game. They really did not want to change with the features and mix things up too much. So much so that all of the features that you're going to get for the Resurrected remastered versions, you can toggle the features on or off. So features that they've added, such as auto pickup gold, changing the 2D models to 3D models, all of these features that they decided they will be better, this is what people want to pay for, you can turn those all off and go back to the original version if you just want to be retro, which is kind of cute and quirky in a way. I don't know if it really adds much, but there are probably certain people out there who will want to play it exactly how it was back in 2000 when it was released. I feel older and older the more that we seem to do these episodes. So Diablo 1997 was the original one, 94% Metacritic. 2000, you had Diablo 2, 88%, back when you had game companies that could release sequels within 3 years instead of 12 years. And then it did take them 12 years to release the third one. 3 years 3 years between the first and second, 12 years between the second and third, and now 9 years, 10 years by the time, hopefully, 4 comes out next year. I was researching that, by the way. Diablo Immortal, the phone game, and D4 have both been delayed until 2022 at best call. So this is pretty much your chance now to feel some exciting new, maybe, if you've never played Diablo 2 before, or just to get back into the gameplay style. And I don't know if maybe it's a bit of a marketing. You know, with we do have Immortal, we do have D4, they're going to be delayed, and here you are, get a bit of a fix. But man, this game was amazing. The classes, you had 5 + 2 classes, so Amazon, Barbarian, Necromancer, Paladin, Sorceress, and then you had the expansion where they added Assassin and Druid. And Diablo 3 was slightly different. You then got 2 extras. You got Demon Hunter and Monk, and they also name changed a few things. So the Assassin became Demon Hunter, the Druid became the Witch Doctor, but the Sorceress became the Wizard. But they were nothing but name changes. The gameplay was still the same. Now, one thing that is different from going from Diablo, where we go back to Diablo 2, which has changed in Diablo 3 for those who have never played Diablo 2 or forgotten, the skill trees are completely different. In that, in Diablo 3, there's your, say you're playing on a controller, every controller button has its own tree. And so it kind of like groups, say like your primary attack feature, you might have 3 different primary attack styles. So you might have a channeled ability, you might have a missile bolt, so you might have an orb attack. And as you upgrade those, as you level up, you gain more powerful versions of those unlocked. But you can switch between those skills freely and easily. You can just say, okay, now I'm going to play a lightning wizard, and I'm going to restart all my points, and I'm going to change all my attacks to lightning. I'm going to change all my buffs to lightning. I'm going to change all my gear. And it's very, very easy to quickly change and swap around. Diablo 2 didn't have that feature, and it won't have that feature. You will not be able to change your skill trees. That means as from the very beginning, when you're unlocking those points and you're putting those things in, you really have to be careful and cautious about which way you're going, depending which class you want to play. And if you get halfway through as a fire mage, you want to play a lightning mage, you're going to have to restart back at the beginning, and you're going to have that sort of like future planned. Because the other big difference is skill trees in Diablo 3, you unlock them once. In fact, you automatically unlock them as you were leveling up in your class. And when you got to level 70, you have everything unlocked. So you can change things around. But once they're unlocked, they're unlocked. And then the gear sets that you get just kind of add powers and damage to those abilities. Diablo 2 had a different feature to it. Skills could be powered up pretty much to have 20 points inside that skill. And as you increase that skill, maybe you released more bolts, you did more damage, you did necromancy, you could raise more skeletons. And again, this was very, very important because you didn't want to put 20 skill points into one skill and then choose that you're going to change your class completely. You basically couldn't do it. So much so that you ended up pretty much going down the tree and sometimes being quite light early on, and then kind of working what you wanted to do and then reinvesting all those points that you've kind of saved up and using gear sets, because the gear sets in this would then add point skills to, so say I've got Ray Skeleton, my gear might give me +2 to Ray Skeleton. So then that's increasing my, and you could even get skills that you didn't have. So if your gear set gave you +2 to Ray Skeleton, you hadn't put any points in Ray Skeleton, then you had 2 points in Ray Skeleton. So for me, I actually kind of prefer that, apart from not being able to change it around too easily, I understand why. I prefer that set of being able to power up these skills, they're becoming better, you've got more variance, because these skills trees were much bigger. So you only had 3 per class. So say that you might be a wizard, you might have 3 different sort of elements pretty much. And when you go into the fire, you can go all the way down and this tree, has these 3 skill tendrils that crawl out into the lower sections. But it really made for variance. If I'm going into that game and I'm a fire mage, then I really am a fire mage. And I might have gone for a fire bolt or fire balls, heavy class, and that's going to really be defining. And then I might come across another person and their build is completely different and I can't even edit or change to that. So it adds a bit more character to those classes as you've built them. So I am really super excited. I don't know, maybe it's dangerous because I haven't played it for maybe about 12 years. And maybe there's nostalgia coming in here, and I'm trying to temper my emotions, failing miserably. I do agree. I know Adam's raised it before. Warcraft 3 Reforged did have some issues. It wasn't well received. But game devs have said, I was reading some articles, they said, we've learned from those mistakes. We've taken the player's feedback into consideration with those lovely comments that we always make. That means we looked and changed nothing, probably. And who knows? Like, they've also said that one of the key features is they're not going to replace the Diablo 2 servers with resurrected servers. They're going to keep those games separate. So even though there's the features, the game's pretty much exactly the same, apart from cosmetic features and toggleable, fairly irrelevant changes. If you're playing Resurrected, you're going to be in Resurrected servers. You're going to be with Resurrected players. You're not going to be able to play with original Diablo 2 players, which is interesting. Why do you think they've done that, guys?
Probably partially because of the Warcraft 3 thing, and they know that if they take those down, there's going to be feedback, and this is a way to kind of, you know, if we do screw up, then people
it's
can go back.
Fail safe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fail safe. That's exactly it. I would assume that would be why. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're not going all in. They are still putting, you know, some safety net.
Yeah, there are some advantages here that Warcraft 3, say, didn't have. For example, Sylvanas in Warcraft 3 was extremely minor. She showed up in, I think, maybe like 2 or 3 missions, and then she died. And then she turned into a Banshee, and then, you know, she was around for a little bit. But she was very minor. She wasn't important at all. And when when World of Warcraft came out, originally, she was just kind of like, you know, she's kind of like a leader of the undead, but she wasn't like this huge deal. And then, of course, she became one of the most prominent characters in World of Warcraft. So when they went back, I know that they kind of retconned a few things to bring them more in line with the World of Warcraft lore. So, like, for example, they made Sylvanas more significant. And so that, I think, kind of hurt. Part of it. I mean, that wasn't one of the major complaints. The major complaints were things not work, like bugs and server issues. But I think that was part of it, was the fact that they didn't just remake Warcraft 3. They, you know, redid it in the image of World of Warcraft. Whereas Diablo, they don't have to do that. There's no reason to go back and undo things. You know, like Diablo 3 didn't really create problems for Diablo 2 in the same way that World of Warcraft has created problems for Warcraft 3. So in that sense, I don't think they have to change too much. It does seem kind of strange that they're like, oh, you can turn on and off like the 3D animation and all that. I mean, that's cool, but it's kind of a strange decision, because it's like, I can buy Diablo 2 Resurrected and play it exactly the same as the original when I could have bought the original for probably used and cheaper. That's an interesting choice. I kind of like it. I think that's a really interesting way to do it. I know a lot of games like the Nier remake, a lot of people were disappointed in the fact that they weren't disappointed that they had a new soundtrack, but they were disappointed in that there was no option to toggle the new soundtrack or the old soundtrack. You only had the newer soundtrack, and I think having something like that where, you know, you could use, say, the old voices, or you could use the old sprites or something like that, I think that's a cool feature. But yeah, I'm kind of wondering, like, you, like, how much of this, because a lot of times you have games like these and, you know, they're great in their time, and then just the natural evolution of games, you know, when you go back to them, they're not as good as we thought. And not that they're not as good as we thought, but, you know, things have just changed so much that it's hard to go back in a way. Like, for example, GoldenEye was fantastic, and Perfect Dark was fantastic. But now that we have games where you can look up and look down, going back and playing those games, and you know, and you can like shoulder weapons and you can sprint, and, you know, we've just added all these quality of life features that if you go back and you play those games, they're kind of a slog in a way. You're like, aiming isn't very precise, and I can't look up easily, and it's kind of, sometimes it can be a bit of a pain, you know, having to go back and realize, you know, the de-evolution of things. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it holds up. I actually never played Diablo 2. I started with Diablo 3. And my
kids.
Yeah, yeah. So I started with Diablo 3, and then my friends had played Diablo 2, though, and they were not pleased with Diablo 3 at all. And for me, I was kind of like, okay, it's okay, but, you know, it's not like I didn't get the hype.
Yeah, I was trying to think of changes when I started playing Diablo 3 and what I was upset and sad about. I remember the quality of life features, the things that I do remember, though, because I remember, like, in Diablo 3, when you pick up a legendary piece of gear, you can actually check it, and they all come unlocked. And in the original one, you had to go back to the city, and then you had to have the guy look at your weapon and change it, and then say, oh, this is the weapon that you've got. But now you can, as soon as you pick it up, you can sort of like discover it yourself. So I do remember, but I don't know if that's better or worse, because you used to have to go back and speak to Deckard Cain, who's one of the most iconic from Diablo 2 characters. In fact, so much so that for those about 4 years where that stay a while and listen was something that all of my friend group used to, you know, coming around to my house. Yeah, okay. Stay a while and listen. You know, almost Cain-esque in how he sounds. That along with like shibby and Budweiser was sort of like all the same times. So I'm looking forward to that, because Deckard Cain played a reduced role. In fact, I'm not going to spoil what happens to him in D3, but he is not a big character compared to how pivotal he is in Diablo 2. Antoine? Diablo fan?
I used to, when 20 years ago, Diablo 2, one of my friends was a big fan, and he kind of roped me into it, and I really liked the game. It's not really that, you know, I'm not really a, you know, Baldur's Gate kind of fan and stuff like this, so I really enjoyed Diablo 2. Right now, you know, like, I'm not really into it, that's why I never bought Diablo 3. My question, though, is who's the customer of this game? Because, like, you and me, I understand it's nostalgia. Well, I want to buy it just because, well, it's, you know, like, one of our game from childhood, and maybe it's great, or maybe it's not anymore. But, you know, it's nostalgia, and you want to buy it just because it's part of your life. But for all the one who have Diablo 3, who is constantly updated with new seasons, and with the D4 coming up in a year or two, why would you go to D2?
Yeah, good question. I'm not entirely sure. In my head, I still feel like it's a marketing thing.
If you're curious and you like retro gaming, all right, but it's not the majority, definitely. Middle-aged gamers as well, but that's not the majority as well. So maybe they just didn't spend much money in the development of this game, but if they have to restart everything from corrupted servers, maybe corrupted codes, it must have cost quite a lot of money in development as well. So how do they plan to make that money back? That's my question. So imagine I'm 15 years younger than I am right now, and I know Diablo 3, and I'm very happy with the seasons, and I'm very happy to restart a character every season. What would you tell me to do to buy Diablo 2? And sorry for putting you on the spot there.
No, I wonder if it could be a few things. I think there's a lot of features that they add. I just started Diablo 3 at the new season, and they've added weapon features similar to Diablo 2. And people have been super excited about it, saying, oh my God, these weapons are so powerful. They're so cool. And then people are like, oh yeah, you could get these drops in Diablo 2. It was like a feature that they've taken from that. So I don't know, maybe if newer gamers, younger gamers that are into Diablo 3 will be lured by the idea of, I mean, it's not full price either. It's only half price game, I think. I'm trying to think, it's about 25, maybe 30. I'm in Taiwan in these dollars now, and it's about 1,200 or something.
Yeah, but it's a remaster. I wouldn't spend more than that. It's not a new game.
No, that's true. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's not a full price game. You're not paying the full price fees for it. But I just feel like it might be part to do with the marketing setup of having Diablo 4 and Diablo Immortal. I think this probably was cheap, comparatively cheap. If they did manage to recover most of the game code from places and people, they already have most of the things done. I don't know. I always imagine part of the reason to remaster everything is it's relatively easy. You've got everything there. And if you can grab £20 or whatever, the 1,200 Taiwanese dollars off a whole bunch of players, then it's extra money in the bank.
True, but be careful not to destroy your franchise. Hello, Warcraft. Because that's reflect very badly on your name. And you don't need that at Blizzard right now.
Well, I think that's why they've been so careful and they've really said, we want to keep it as close to... We're keeping everything, all the features, nothing's changing. And the gaps in the code that they did have, they, like I said, went and found original staff members who did and wrote and coded everything. And, you know, don't make it fancy, make it exactly like how you did.
Playing it too safe is not going to be good either. As you said, why not, if it's exactly the same, then take the original copy and that's it.
True, but I mean, this is being released on everything. So you can get it on Switch and platforms that you weren't able to get it originally.
Fair enough. Well, we'll see. I'm just curious to see what will be the fallout of this game. Like,
I'll get this on Switch, probably.
All right.
Because I've got Diablo 3 on both Switch and PlayStation, and I play it far more on Switch than I do on. It's just one of those games that just feels better.
I'm kind of curious. I mean, what do you think with the? Because like right now, obviously Blizzard is in hot water. They're not doing too well. And this current lawsuit is, 2 years old at this point? But, I mean, it's really hitting the news now. I mean, they even come out and said that State Farm and Coca-Cola are going to be completely abandoning Blizzard and as far as esports go and because of it. And that's obviously going to... Yeah, that's really going to impact Overwatch 2 coming out. Do you think that... Obviously, Diablo 2 was not planned for this before, or was not planned for this as a result of that. This was already in development prior to these things. But do you think that these things could affect Diablo 2's kind of reception?
For the players, no. I mean, what's going to affect it is knowing what kind of remaster they have done with their other franchise before. Again, Warcraft, they know that Blizzard, it might not be the best company at doing remasters, so maybe they're going to be cold feet and wait to see the reception before buying it. You know, it's honestly unlikely to see people, maybe apart from Phil, but buying it day one. You know, I think most people will be, might be great, might be nice. Let's wait. Let's see what the review says.
So you don't think the Blizzard's current reputational... turn people away?
Not the problem they had with World of Warcraft or the CEO jumping ship or stuff. No, I really think it's more like, what did they do with the previous franchise remaster? Much more than what their current lawsuit is, because I think it's kind of unrelated to the teams developing the game.
Yeah, I don't know which teams are involved with which. They have a lot of games in the pipe, so.
It's much more political than anything else.
What do you think, Phil?
I don't know. I'm not with woke enough people to know which issues are the ones that stop people from buying games. I kind of just buy games if I like it rather than based on political principles. It's the same with music. Everyone says, oh, don't go and watch that band because of whatever, whatever, whatever. And it's just like, well, if they make good music, then that's the base one, you know, issue that I have with a music maker. And the number one key issue with a games developer is, do they make a good game? So I don't know. It depends on how many groups out there. I mean, obviously they do, but I don't know how much of the World of Warcraft decline is based on these issues as opposed to people just being tired of a company that hasn't listened to them over a sustained period of time and run the game into the ground. I imagine that's a bigger issue, as much as it disheartens me about discrimination and the negatives of corporate issues. I think at the end of the day, it still just comes down to playability more than morality.
So you think people might just be using that as kind of like an excuse, like, oh, I've been wanting to get out of the game for a while now, but you know, I just can't. And it's like, this is a good time to do it. This is a good
Warriors unite. Yeah, we'll move on from this game. Yeah. I've just decided now.
All right. Well, anybody else have something more comments on Diablo 2? Or
no, I think it's all yours now.
All right. It's all mine. I'm going to pick another game that might be a little bit controversial as well. I'm going with Aliens Fireteam Elite. And the only reason that might be controversial is because of Aliens Colonial Marines, which came out a while ago. And it has left a bad taste in everybody's mouth ever since. So, yeah. But this one is made by a different studio. That one was made by Gearbox. This one is made by Cold Iron Studios. It is also published by them, and it is expected to come out later this month on August 24th. It's going to be on PC, and it's going to be on both, would you call them current and next gen, or current and previous gen? I don't really know. But the PS4, PS5, and the Xbox One, and the XS series. So this game is kind of a Left 4 Dead kind of game. I guess you'd call it a co-op mission-based shooter, kind of like Left 4 Dead or Outriders. You have different classes. They have a medic, they have a gunner, they have bruisers. I don't remember what they're called. But so each class has its own set of basically weapons that they are able to equip. They also have certain abilities, and then they also have certain passives. So for example, the medic's passives allows everybody in the fire team to move a little bit faster and increases their fire rate. But that the trade-off is that the medic himself cannot carry heavy weapons. He can only carry lighter weapons, but he can put down a little pod that, you know, if people are standing within the space, then they can heal. And then the I don't remember what they're called, but the heavy guys, they get the smart gun from the movies. They can also use the burst rifle, and they also get the flamethrowers, but they can also equip the heavy flamethrowers and that sort of thing. So you can customize your marine, you can customize the weapons that you get. You can get different attachments to the weapons that you want to improve your weapons. You have your class abilities. One of the guys, I think it's a security officer, can put down like a sentry gun and that sort of thing. And then basically the way the game works out, it seems kind of short from what they've described, in my opinion, but maybe it's not as short as I'm thinking it is. But basically what they have 4 campaigns, and each campaign has 3 missions in it. So there's a total of 12 different missions. Each campaign gives you a little bit more of a story, and this is supposed to kind of expand the aliens universe. And this is very much what they've said, is this is very much an Aliens game, not an Alien game. So it's definitely, I mean, there might be some scary elements to it, but mostly it's, you know, more like a Vietnam War era kind of thing. It's not a horror game in a sense, you know, it's more of a action oriented kind of game. And it's supposed to give you that kind of like things are, you know, falling apart and getting out of control, where, you know, as you go, you're being swarmed, and you know, you're running low on med kits, and, you know, you start off and you're feeling really great and powerful, and you've got all these big guns. And then as you go along, it's like, ammo's kind of running low. We're getting kind of screwed here. So it looks kind of interesting. The comparisons that I've seen, to me, it kind of looks like, what do you call it? Outriders. But most of the comparisons I've seen have actually been closer. People have been comparing it more to Left 4 Dead. So it's supposed to be kind of like that. They did say that it is always 3 players. There's always 3 people in your fire team. But if you can't find people to play with, what they're going to do is they will give you 2 AI companions. But they said that actually what they did to kind of compensate for that is they actually made them literal AI companions in the game lore. You know, they were synthetics. So if they act a little bit weird, that's why. It's not because they're, you know, the AI is dumb. It's because it's in-game lore is the AI is dumb. So that'll kind of help you out. You know how these things go, though. You know, the AI just makes mistakes. You know, they run into places where they shouldn't. Or, you know, you're trying to lock down a corridor and they go running out into the open. And you're like, no, come back. So this game is definitely a game that you should be playing with a group of people. You should not be playing it alone. You should not be solo. You basically can't solo it. And so you shouldn't be, unlike, say, Outriders, which I think you could kind of solo if you wanted to, but you could also go in with friends. So for me, if I had friends to play this with, I would be really, really interested. Kind of my only thing that I'm kind of like, I'm not so sure, is if I can find people to play it with. If I can't, then it's kind of like I probably wouldn't even pick it up. But I do like the alien lore, and they say they are kind of expanding on it. They did a really big deep dive. They're really trying to stay faithful to the source material. They, for example, it does pull in some things from Prometheus and that sort of thing, but they the pulse rifles in the movie have a very distinctive kind of like, you know, kind of sound. I can't even do it, but they have a very distinctive sound. They made sure that they're using those sounds in the game, so the guns feel authentic. They aren't just pulling from the movies. They're also pulling from comics and, you know, the Prometheus films. And even one of the things that they were saying is they're doing kind of a deep dive where in one of the original scripts, there's the mention of this. The Marines are part of the United American Federation or something like that. I don't remember what they're called. But anyway, there was always in the original script, there was also kind of an opposing faction or another faction that was kind of the future version of the USSR. And that was never in the films, that was never in the comics, that was never in the books, but it was in the original script. And in this one, they do mention that group. So they are kind of trying to make it as close to the original, you know, the source material as they possibly can. So yeah, it looks really interesting to me. I always thought that I always really enjoyed the Aliens franchise. I always thought it was kind of fun. I think they are coming up with some new species here, but they are saying that they are going to change things up as well. For instance, one of the previews I saw in the first level, you're basically in a mining station very similar to the Nostromo, and it's very much like the original Aliens movie, you know, tight corridors. They're all xenomorphs. You know, there's bigger ones or smaller ones, but they're all xenomorphs. In the second level, you go to one of the engineer worlds, and again, you're fighting xenomorphs, but there are also the company starts sending synthetics after you. Was it like Wayland or something? They're sending synthetics after you. And so because of that, you know, in the first mission that you're playing, xenomorphs are pretty much exclusively melee. So what you're doing is you're trying to get them into a bottleneck and, you know, kill them off. Whereas when you get into level two and they start adding synthetics to the mix, synthetics can use guns. And so now it's, you know, you have to do some cover based tactics. And so your tactics are going to have to change depending on what enemies you're facing. And also the xenomorphs will fight against the synthetics. So you can actually kind of goad your opponents into fighting each other. So if you can manage to do that, then that's a strategy as well. And they also said that one thing that this will be different from at least what I experienced when I was playing the demo for Outriders. Phil might know better. But they actually have AI in the game that will kind of change up the situation from times to times. And so you're not always going to be encountering enemies in the same place. So each time you play through, it's going to be different. You know, you might not be encountering, you know, you might go through one area and there's just xenomorphs crawling all over the walls. And the next time you go through, you know, they're not there. They're somewhere else. And, you know, or maybe they come in from behind you as opposed to coming from the front, you know, or so they have things like that. So they can change it up. So it's supposed to kind of build that kind of intense feeling of things are falling apart and you never get into a kind of a comfort zone where you're like, okay, I know how this is going to go because every time it's going to go different. And then the other thing that they said is that they are adding what they call cards. And so when you do a mission, you can put a card on that mission, and the card will create kind of artificial difficulty in a way. So it'll say something like, you can only kill things with headshots, or, you know, there's more limited ammo, or you can't heal, or something like that. So the cards will put artificial difficulty on the missions. But then when you complete the mission with those cards, you get bonus resources, you get bonus experience, you get bonus, you know, you're going to find better weapons and stuff like that, better resources and that sort of thing. So you can up the difficulty and then you can get benefits from that. And the other thing that I thought was really cool was as you up the difficulty, the game gets significantly harder. For instance, on the normal difficulty, they kind of highlight where the enemies are. So even if you're in a darker area, you can still kind of see them. Higher difficulties, that's not a thing. So they can hide in shadows. In normal mode, there is no friendly fire. Higher modes, there is. So you don't want your flamethrower guy standing in the back. So there is going to be a very heavy emphasis on kind of working as a team, having that kind of tactical, you know, like, who's on point, you know, who's going to be shooting over shoulders, you know, who's going to cover the left side, the right side, and that sort of thing. So to me, that looks really interesting. I would not get this game on release. I'm going to definitely take a page from Antoine's book here, see how it goes first, because this is one of those things where it could come out and be amazing, or it could come out and just not be good at all, or it could come out and be amazing, but nobody gives it a chance and it dies very early on just because there's nobody playing it. So, which happens sometimes, you know, where people go in, they're too skeptical and the game actually ends up being good, but they just never get the population to maintain consistent, you know, games. So sometimes you just get unlucky that way. So yeah, I'm definitely going to give this one a wait and see if I can get some people together to play it. Yeah, it has my interest basically. So
okay, we are kind of running late, so maybe one question for Adam. Phil, do you have anything?
I have two questions. One's quick though. Crossplay.
I don't know. I haven't seen that. Maybe not. I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up.
Okay. My second one is, do three-man fire teams come from something in the real military world? Because I'm seeing this in more and more games now. We seem to have changed from four-man to three-man. Why is that? Why are all these games going to three-man teams?
Either for the matchmaking.
Yeah, it might be because of the matchmaking thing. It might be, yeah, two things. One thing that I was thinking here was I kind of wish that what they did is, because they have the adaptive AI that kind of changes up the enemy pacing, I really kind of wish that they had allowed for significantly larger groups, but then the AI would compensate for that. And, you know, so you could go in with 12 guys, but it would just be a complete poo show to watch my language here, you know, and then with, say, something like friendly fire, that could definitely become really crazy. So I think I kind of wish that they did have more than three people, but yeah, I don't know why the standard is three. It might just be matchmaking thing, or it might be related to, say, something like World of Warcraft, where people came up with the holy trinity of the tank, the DPS, and the healer, and you know, variations on that is you have an extra DPS usually, and that's basically it. I mean, usually two healers.
I feel sorry for younger gamers. Back in my time, you could have three friends and you could all play. Now you can only have two friends. You want to play with somebody new, you've got to get rid of one of your old friends.
Or find two new friends and break into two groups. And making friends is hard. All right, so I'm guessing Antoine's not going to have any questions then, or?
Quick one. Can you play the Alien?
No, unfortunately, this is not like the 2000 Alien versus Predator. You cannot play as a xenomorph. You can only play as a marine. Yeah, the 2000 Alien vs. Predator was amazing because you could play as a marine, you could play as a xenomorph, or you could play as a predator. And it was a fantastic game. And I wish that that was the game that people associated with Aliens games, not mm-hmm. Colonial Marine, because that game was fantastic. But unfortunately, no, you are only a Colonial Marine in this game. And you can have bright pink fuchsia guns, which apparently a lot of people are not happy about, but apparently they had an option to turn off other players' cosmetics. So if you don't want to see people looking like a fool, you can just default them to Joe Shit the Ragman grunt if you wish. All right, well, if there are no further questions, that brings us pretty much right up to time. So thank you everybody for listening once again. If you have not already clicked that little subscribe button or the bell or whatever it is that you need to click to make sure you see us again, do it now, because yeah, we want you to come back. And with that, pretty much we don't have a theme, or do we have a theme for next week? Or
I was proposing to do a special Zelda.
All right, yeah, so we can do a Legend of Zelda special then, pick some of our favorites. And Phil's like looking at it like, oh, I don't know anything about Legend of Zelda, so he's gonna ask us questions.
Yeah, I might leave you two guys to that one.
You have a Switch.
My knowledge of Zelda.
You have a Switch and you never played Breath of the Wild, mate, come on.
All right, so maybe we'll do a Legend of Zelda, or maybe Phil will convince us that that is a bad idea. So we'll see how it goes. But either way, we will be here, so make sure you subscribe and click the bell and all that so that you can be here when we come here. And anybody else want to say something else before we sign off?
No, I was going to raise the whole cryptocurrency hack, but we just at all the time it with my Diablo 2.
Yeah, I got some news stuff too about the Alienware things have been banned in California. Have you heard about that? Alienware PCs and certain gaming PCs have been banned in California for consuming too much electricity. So you cannot buy them. You can buy the parts and build them yourself, but they've actually banned the sale of some of these things, which is kind of amazing.
Assault rifle? Fine. High-powered computer gaming? No.
Yeah, no, that's bad for the environment. But yeah, so...
I love America.
I don't know if you could buy a... Not in California, but can you what?
Just remind me what you are streaming this week.
I am not sure yet. I did Hunter's Arena on Monday, and next week I'm debating whether I'm going to do Hunter's Arena again or Greedfall, because that would be Hunter's Arena twice in a row. But I'm only streaming once a week, so I don't know. Maybe I'll do Hunter's Arena again. Maybe I'll do Greedfall. I haven't decided yet. I'll surprise you guys. What about you guys? What are you streaming?
Me, I'm trying to finish Spellcaster University just before Tales of Arise came out. So,
and when does that come out?
September 9. So okay. I have 1 month.
All right. And Phil, what are you going to be streaming?
I'm not going to curse myself. Every time I do it, I end up being bedridden for like 3 or 4 days after my jab last time. And I was super confident about I'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, it was kind of like Monday before I felt well. So I don't know. We will see. I've got to go to the doctors again today. Normally, I was going to stream on Wednesday. But...
All right. Well, if you are available, what would you like to stream?
I don't know. I'm kind of like a bit... I was enjoying Vermintide, and I was kind of enjoying Dark Alliance, but I feel both of those games, you kind of like have to be going with the group, and everybody I know seems to have moved on from those games. So I'm not entirely sure. And I was going to buy... Battlefleet, and then it's gone back to full price. I just missed on the sale, and it like tripled in value. And I was like, what is this madness? I'm 2 days later, and you want me to pay three times more? I'm just going to wait for the next sale.
How it goes sometimes. All right, so Phil's going to surprise you. I'm going to surprise you. And Antoine is not going to surprise you, because he needs to get this out of the way.
Exactly.
Because he's got his priorities in order. In French. He's playing this one in French, but Tales of Arise, he'll be playing it in Japanese with English subtitles.
Commentary in French, though.
And commentary in French. So that way, Phil can finally be educated on the wonders of the JRPG in a real language, as he puts it. All right. And with that, we're going to end the show before Antoine goes ham on us. So see you all next week. Have a lovely week, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.